We are in my home watching the Olympics these days, as I'm sure many of us are. We especially enjoy watching the gymnastics. Yeah, that's the bread and butter of Olympic television. It's what a lot of people tune in to watch. The first thing that I tuned in to watch was Jordan Chiles, one of the young American female gymnasts. And the first thing that I saw happen in the whole Olympics was where she kind of ran to jump up on this long balance beam, and she got up there and immediately fell off. And then there was that muted, as only the Olympic announcers can do. They all went, and then Jordan Chiles got back up on the bar and did almost a perfect routine after that. She was actually really amazing. She did flips, cartwheels, all kinds of spins and things on this long 16-foot balance beam that is 5 feet above the ground and 4 inches wide. It's amazing to me what they can do. But it was a reminder to me that actually we shouldn't take balance for granted. It's hard for them to find balance. Simone Biles, another young female gymnast, best in the world. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. I love her floor routines. She just runs from one corner or the other, and about halfway through, she starts jumping and doing all these twists and flips and cartwheels, and I can't even tell what she's doing, but people who judge know what she's doing. And it's amazing to me to think that she, as well as all these other gymnasts, with their different routines, their different weight, height, different strengths, they're all doing the same thing. They're flipping through the air. They're calibrating how to have balance when they land. Doing all these things so that when they land, they don't move an inch. That's the idea. It's captivating to me, and I think to the rest of the world, because I think there's something in us that longs for balance in our lives. Now, maybe you're not a gymnast. Maybe you are. But I know, you know, we seek balance in our diets, right? You don't want to eat a whole meal of cake. You might want to eat that. You wouldn't eat a whole meal of cake. We want our reporting to be balanced and objective. We want our careers and our family life to have balance to them, right? All of life, there's something in us that pulls us towards this idea of balance. Right after my boys saw Simone Biles just do her flips and stuff on TV, they started trying to do flips right there in the room. They had no idea what they were doing. It was very dangerous, but they were captivated by it. In our Ephesians reading this morning, Paul is painting a picture of gospel balance. And for Paul, balance is vital to the gospel message, to the gospel life. He literally begs the people reading this letter to work to achieve it. So that's what we're going to lean into this morning. We're going to, if you stick with me, which I think you will, I see most of the whites of your eyes here this morning. We will learn together a little bit about how we might walk our faith on a 4-inch balance beam and how Jesus walks with us in that so that we're not just flying around the living room in a very dangerous kind of way. First thing that I want us to look at is that verse. Thank you, Cheryl, for pointing out that verse, chapter 4, verse 1, is a little bit challenging. I, therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called. One of the first things we learned in Greek in seminary was when you see the word therefore, you have to ask, what's it there for? This little conjunction does a lot of work. Everything that has been said before is being imported into everything that's about to be said. So this little Greek conjunction is serving as a strong hinge. And remember, Paul's letter to the Ephesians is kind of broken up into two halves, and this is the hinge point. First half, 10,000-foot view of the gospel. Second half, how we live that out in our day-to-day lives. So, therefore, as one commentator put it, the whole letter turns on this sentence, and particularly on this word, worthy. Worthy. I don't know what connotations come to your mind when you hear that invitation to be worthy of a calling to which we've been called. But this is a word that comes with an image. The image behind the word worthy is an image of scales, right? Weighted scales that might have been used at the time to purchase, say, a pound of flour. Right? You bust out your scales, you put a 1 pound weight on one side, and you pour enough flour on the other side so that the two things become worthy. In Greek, the word axios, where we get our word axis from. In this way, two very different things, a lead weight and flour, become perfectly in alignment with each other. Walk in a manner that is worthy of the calling to which you have been called. So what's our calling? Today, I think when we hear the word calling, we oftentimes assume that it means our vocation, and it can. You know, we think if you're a doctor, a barista, if you're a stay-at-home mom, if you're a pastor, that's your calling. True enough, that's not what Paul is talking about here primarily. There is a more foundational calling that he is pointing to. And this is where the import of the first half comes into play. The calling that Paul is referring to is the gospel calling. If you were to go back and read chapters 1 through 3 again, and I recommend you do it, that is what Paul's referring to. Walk worthy of the calling to which you have been called. That Jesus is, in fact, our risen King to whom we give our allegiance before anybody else. That he has given us a free gift of grace. That the power of evil is actually broken in our lives. The patterns that we feel so often constrain us and constrict us. That all the mistakes that we have made, are making, and will make are wiped clean. And in this way, we are brought from death to life. Not just sometime in the future, but now, today, we experience new life. And now we have the power to live as one diverse people who belong to a King who loves us intimately, who heals us so that we can heal others. This is the grace that is given to us that Paul refers to later on in our passage. And this is our calling. You can't sum it up on the side of a coffee cup, right? It's a big calling. Every Christian is called to this calling, an allegiance that will change our lives. The calling is on one side of the scales. And Paul says, walk with axios to this calling. Before Christian faith really took root in me, I had a vague sense of some kind of religious scales in my life. As long as I did more good in my life than I did bad, I thought I would be okay. I didn't know if heaven existed or not, but if it did, I thought I would make the cut. I was doing pretty good. I call this the don't be a jerk set of scales. There are a lot of problems with this. I think one is that it turns God into this kind of distant, pedantic figure who's constantly assessing whether or not you're worth the space that you take up in his kingdom. I don't believe in that God. But I think a lot of people believe enough in that kind of God to reject him. This is a false set of scales, but it's one that we as Christians oftentimes find ourselves taking on almost accidentally. When we say Jesus was only a good moral teacher teaching us how to be better people, we set up that same don't be a jerk set of scales. When we say Jesus has given us a ticket to heaven, and so we better act thankful in our lives, working harder to be good people, we set up this same set of false don't be a jerk scales. These are not the scales of Paul's axios. Back to Simone Biles a little bit. 4 years ago, she was in the Olympics also, and she was doing great up until one routine where all of a sudden she developed something called the twisties. I'd never heard of this before, but as she put it, she was lost in the air. All of a sudden, something between her brain and kind of her inner gyroscope, I don't really understand how it all works, She could not tell up from down or left from right while she was spinning through the air, and she started looking more like what my boys were doing in the living room than what she should be doing on an Olympic mat. And it was actually quite dangerous. She wasn't just a little bit off. She had a completely wrong set of scales. Paul is saying, you've got the twisties. You've got a completely wrong set of scales. Let me show you what gospel balance, gospel scales look like. And let me just say, gospel balance, the gospel, it's not primarily about being a good person. And it's not something that only one person can balance out. Gospel balance involves a community, a new humanity. One person alone can never balance out this calling. I think that's some of what we feel, Cheryl, when you say, oh, that's a big calling. Yeah, that's right, it is. Does the gospel involve individual decisions and transformed lives? Absolutely. Is it making us better than we were? Absolutely it is. Is that the point of the gospel? No. Balance with our gospel calling could only ever be something that we achieve together. It's like Tom mentioned last week when he was here. Paul's voice in his letter to the Ephesians is never saying you singular. He's always speaking to y'all, all y'all, together. So, on one side, we have this big, audacious, foundational gospel calling. And on the other side, we have a community, what Paul calls the ecclesia, the church. This is the correct kind of scale to be thinking about. And so what do we do with that? Paul urges us, compels us, begs us to walk worthy of this calling. He's in prison when he's writing this letter, remember this. And the Greek word he uses there, parakaleo, is like a with calling. It's almost like he's reaching through the letter, grabbing us by the lapels and saying, do this now. It's that important. So how do we do this? Paul says, maintain the unity of the Spirit. Maintain the unity of the Spirit. Read the next few verses, because Paul is describing the fabric of this kind of unity. With all humility, gentleness, patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. This is a picture of a community. Humility, lowliness of mind, this idea of first recognizing the value of the other person. Not downplaying yourself, but having your focus on the worth of the other. Gentleness, this thing that I think we oftentimes assume means a kind of weakness or a kind of passive posture. The word is actually a posture of strength, but somebody who can control their strength and become a servant of other people. This actually was not a positive value at the time, but Paul brings it in and says, gentleness. This is what unity of the Spirit looks like. And all the others, he's describing this fabric of the community, and he says, spare no effort in maintaining this unity together. For Paul, balancing out our calling is clear. We seek the unity of the church. This is where we find our axios. Why does he urge us so strongly to do this? He knows we're prone to division. This is not something that we've made up today. This is something that they were struggling with in their time as well. Paul's next verses are strong. He's celebrating unity. He's talking, well, I won't read it all again. We read it already, but He uses the word one 7 times, one hope, one faith, one baptism, one Father, right? He's using, so 3 of the times he uses to describe the Trinity, four of the times he's using to describe the life of the church, as if to say, these things are all working together. They're one together. And he is saying, this is indestructible. There is only one. You cannot separate it. Now, you might say, Michael, it looks like we've done quite a good job of separating this thing that you say is inseparable. If you look around, the church is divided. Within churches, we are often divided. And that's right. Paul, I think this is where a distinction is really helpful, this distinction between the invisible church and the visible church. So the invisible church, this is the church, you know, all believers throughout time and space, throughout the world, everybody who has professed Jesus, given their allegiance to Jesus. This is the invisible church that absolutely cannot be divided. This is what Paul is referring to. This is our reality. And yet he urges us to maintain unity because the visible church matters to him. It's not enough to say, well, we're, you know, the invisible church is a reality, so how we act towards one another doesn't matter that much. It's a little bit like a family who, say, all the kids are estranged, mom and dad are in legal squabbles, everybody's living all over the place, not talking to each other. Would we say, well, they're all still technically part of the same family, it's okay? No, we would long for that to be different. We would long for the actual expression of what is invisible to be more united, to be more together. And this is what Paul is saying. Yes, invisible church, but what is visible matters. It's the best thing that we have to offer to the world. Spare no expense to protect the visible unity that we have in the Spirit. Gospel balance is found as we seek the unity of the church together. Now, I think when we hear the word unity, oftentimes that translates to uniformity. But unity does not mean uniformity, right? This is kind of a false unity, this sense, this sort of image of everyone sitting around and just agreeing with everybody, everyone's similar, thinks the same kinds of things. That's uniformity. That's actually a result of the division that we have experienced in the church. People are kind of cloistering together in like-mindedness. And Paul is saying that's actually not right. This is something that not only the church is experiencing, but we in our country today are experiencing. This dynamic called the Great Sort, if you've heard about it, where Republicans, Democrats are tending to move into spaces where there are more like-minded people. We are cloistering together with people who already think and believe like we do. We're actually losing a lot of the diversity around our nation. It's a little bit like that in the church. The more we divide, the more we actually lose our diversity. How do we know Paul believes that diversity is vital to unity? He speaks to the fivefold office: apostle, prophet, evangelist, let's see if I can do this, shepherd, teacher, right? We need a diversity of gift sets, a diversity of voices to be able to find this axios, to find this gospel balance. Prophets and shepherds, they may kind of butt heads. Prophets are usually kind of difficult to get along with sometimes. But that's the point. We need to lean into our differences together. I tend to be more of a shepherd. But if we had a church full of shepherds, we would be getting it wrong. We need the diversity of voices and gifts and postures in our congregation. He also uses the image of the body, where, you know, this image crops up plenty in his writings. This image where all these hundreds of different parts are working together towards one goal. And no one part can say to another, you don't belong. You're not good enough. Have you ever felt bad about the gifts that you have? or the feeling that maybe you don't have many gifts to offer. Maybe like you don't belong in the church. Hear me say, we absolutely need you. Every single person in this church, we need you vitally. This is what Paul is telling us. Unity requires diversity. Uniformity feels safe, but it is not good. Paul urges us to seek this unity together. Axios, walk worthy of the gospel calling that is on all of us. It is hard work, and that's why we have to keep, as Paul says, walking. And this is where I'll kind of leave us. Remember, Paul says, I urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling given to you. So, like I said, while we were watching gymnastics, my boys caught the vision. They saw this amazing thing happening on TV. They started spinning around, doing all kinds of crazy things. They knocked stuff over, knocked into the chair. They did this for like 20 minutes, all right? It was terrifying. They fell all over the place. But what I loved was that they were captivated by the vision. We have to let ourselves be captivated by the vision of gospel balance because it is hard work. Eugene Peterson says, we have to let this image come into our ears, beckoning us into the future, because walking is not a static reality. Today, we may feel really unified, but we need to be able to calibrate as we continue walking together. Peterson goes on to say, the usefulness of this metaphor is in keeping us alert to the delicate, sensitive connection between call and walk, a relationship that is never one-sided, but always reciprocal. If we are going to grow up in Christ, we have to do it in the company of everyone who is responding to the call of God. Whether we happen to like them or not has nothing to do with it. Paul invites us to walk together in a manner that is worthy of our calling, movement, over time, in relationship, committing to lean in to one another rather than running away when we are scared or hurt. Gospel balance. It doesn't mean getting this perfect, right? Calling. The other side isn't about being perfect. The other side is about committing, leaning in, being the community that God has called us to be. It's about walking this path together in relationship. John Wesley says, the New Testament knows nothing of a solitary religion. This isn't me and God in my Bible. To walk out our axios, our gospel balance, we have to do it together. Unity in the church. There's so much more that can be said about this topic. There's a lot of pain around a topic like this. Because it's hard, and we get it wrong all the time. Humility. It's one of the hardest things that we will ever do if we're doing it right. But we can do it because the King to whom we give our allegiance humbled himself, thought of our worth over his own, and did what was right for us. When you offer your gifts, do it with gentleness. Do it with this idea that I bring strength and yet I'm becoming a servant of those around me. What would it look like to bear with those around us who kind of rub us the wrong way in the church? I'm sure none of us have that in this group, but just hypothetically speaking, if we had those, what would it look like to share space with another church with love and respect for one another? Right? Speaking directly to each other when issues come up. Open conversation. And what would it look like to move towards somebody in humility when you have been hurt by them, wronged by someone else, or when you have wronged them? What would it look like to lean in to those relationships? This is the best thing that we have to give the world, walking in balance with our calling. So let us walk in balance. Here at the Vine, we can do that together. Beyond us in Haywood County, we can walk with love, humility, gentleness towards other churches, towards those outside the church. This is the calling to which we have been called. Let's do it together.